TV with Victor Thorne and Lisa Giuliani. The revolution is being televised.
Hello, it's Tuesday, August 3rd, and you're watching Wing TV. I'm Lisa Giuliani.
And I'm Victor Thorne. Welcome to Wing TV. As many of you have told us, you couldn't wait for today, and in all honesty, we couldn't either.
Nope.
Because on today's show, we have the great Jim Mars, and he's the author, as many of you know, of Rule by Secrecy, The War on Freedom. He's also the author of Crossfire, Psy Spies, and his latest, as you can see right here on the screen, Inside Job, which was just released.
And Alien Agenda.
Alien Agenda, that's right. Also, if anyone would ask me, who's the best researcher out there, who's the one that can take all this information and put the best story together out of any of them, without hesitation, I'd point my finger to Mr. Jim Mars. He's the best out there, and we're very, very honored to have him. So, Jim, welcome to Wing TV.
Welcome, Jim.
Well, thank you, Lisa, and thank you, Victor. It's a pleasure to be with you.
And, you know, Jim, I've done as much research on 9/11 as just about anybody out there, but whenever I read your books, you still come up with something new that I haven't seen. So where do you get all this stuff?
Well, I don't know. I guess you could call me an information magnet. I have people from all over the world sending me stuff, and of course it helps to have 40 years of journalist experience behind you, and you just start putting this stuff together. And you know, when you start looking at 9/11 and look at all the information that's now available, which of course is what the authorities and the government does not want you to do.
Exactly.
You know, that's why they keep you, the corporate control media keeps you focused on just day to day, this little bit here. All the 9/11 Commission today said that they're facing some foot dragging by the Bush administration, but then a week later it's something else, and they keep you distracted, divided.
Right.
You have to look at the big picture, and when you look at the big picture of 9/11, it's not very pretty, is it?
No, it's not at all. Now I'm holding your book up right now so all the viewers can see it. This is Inside Job, published by Origin Press, and also Jim's website can be found at Jim Mars. com. So, Jim, tell us, first of all, how this book came about. I know it was supposed to be published by HarperCollins, and when we interviewed you about a year and a half ago or so on our old radio show, they had just dropped this book, so it had been edited, vetted, ready for press, and then they dropped it. So what happened?
That's correct. Well, to go back even before that, the day after 9/11, I published a thing on my website that said, this is really terrible, and we've got to find out who's responsible for this and see that they're brought to justice. I said, but let's don't run off half-cocked. Let's just don't take facile, immediate pronouncements from the government like we did with the Kennedy assassination and all these other conspiracies that most people have now studied and realized that we were kind of lied to. I said, let's find out who's really behind here. And even before the end of 2001, beginning of 2002, I'd accumulated such a wealth of information. The basics, okay? Al-Qaeda, yes, it exists, but it was created by our CIA. Osama bin Laden, yes, but he was also a creation of our CIA, brought to this country during the Reagan years under the name Tim Osman and given arms, ammunition, aid, and comfort, okay? So we created all these guys. What's our guarantee that they've gone rogue, that they're not still operating on the CIA? And then particularly when you look and find that everything that's happened subsequently, the invasion of Afghanistan, the invasion of Iraq, the oil pipeline, the regrowing of the poppy fields in Afghanistan, the whole idea of a Pax Americana, this permanent Middle East, permanent war on terror, this is all outlined. This is all written down back to position papers written during the first Bush administration. This was a game plan that they wanted, and according to the Project for New American Century, which is a neocon think tank, they made it very plain, though, that they couldn't get their agenda pushed through unless there was another new Pearl Harbor-type attack.
Right.
Well, they got it on September the 11th.
On the morning of September 11th, the National Reconnaissance Office, the NRO, was conducting these pre-planned simulated exercises to see what would happen if a plane hit a building. And their chief of strategic gaming division, John Fulton, said it was a bizarre coincidence. What was going on that day? And they call it
This is very critical to understanding what was happening, because keep in mind that President Bush, Condoleezza Rice, Rumsfeld, Cheney, they have all said almost like a mantra over and over again, who would have ever thought that they would have hijacked airplanes and flown them into buildings? Well, they because even as early 2001, some of these war game planners were postulating scenarios where hijackers hijack airplanes and fly them into buildings. Now listen, guys, here's a real shocker for you. I may have the defense for the Bush administration as to the lack of response on 9/11. That's been one of the biggest questions brought up. How can they hijack four airlines, they go off course, they crashing into buildings, and no interceptors were put in the air for almost a half an hour. Nobody was responding, and even President Bush kept sitting in the classroom reading a goat book to little kids, even after he'd been told that America was under attack. What's going on? Well, those war games expanded far beyond the NRO. The whole northeast section of NORAD, North American Air Defense Command, was holding war game exercises called Valiant Guardian. Okay? And I cannot prove this at this point, but I have on very good authority one of the scenarios envisioned was hijackers hijacking airplanes, right, flying them into buildings. Here's the explanation, guys. When they started hearing that planes are off course and planes are hitting buildings, they go, ho-hum, this is part of the war game exercises. Yeah. Now, that's a defense for the sluggishness of our response of normal security precautions. The question, though, is how come they haven't told us that?
Right. Nobody knows.
How come they haven't even leaked that out? And the reason is the next question becomes, how did the hijackers know when to coordinate their attack with these war games? They could not have known unless they had inside information. This is the proof of the inside job. Somebody tipped them off, and we know it's true because it's now been known that the day before September the 11th, the NSA intercepted an electronic communication from Mohammed Atta, supposedly the leader of these hijackers, and he said, the match begins tomorrow is 0 hour. The match. He didn't say the jihad or the battle or the operation. He said the match, the game. The game begins tomorrow at 0 hour. They knew when to coordinate their attacks.
They stopped these games after the first plane hit the tower, supposedly, correct?
Supposedly.
Yeah. Now, another point you bring up, Jim, in your book that isn't brought up hardly anywhere, a man named Abu Zubaydah. I hope I'm saying his name.
Zubaydah.
Now,
right, you're right, Victor. You hit the nail on the head. To me, this is a smoking gun. A year ago or so in Pakistan, they arrested a man named Abu Zubaydah, R.A. Flasher, who at that time was the White House press secretary, was ecstatic, made a big deal out of it, and said, he's the most high-ranking Al-Qaeda chief that we've caught to date, and by golly, we're going to make him talk. Well, they did, through a subterfuge, and guess what they find out? That he's actually working for three Saudi princes.
Yeah.
So now we find out that the Al-Qaeda network created by our CIA is actually being funded and ordered around by the Saudis. And who are the close business and social friends of the Saudis?
Right, the Bushes.
The Bush family.
And what happened to these three princes?
This is where we're getting to the crux of the whole thing. And, of course, this was the very area that the Warren Commission, I mean the 9/11 Commission, slip of the tongue there.
Synonymous.
Freudian slip. That's one of the areas that they just totally failed to go into. In fact, that's what the Bush administration was dragging their feet on so hard, was the whole section pointing to the Saudis.
And blacking out in reports.
But we need to be fair. And in another sense, Israel also played a part in 9/11.
That's true. Absolutely. And I detail all of this. In fact, I have a whole section in my book, Inside Job, talking about Israeli foreknowledge. There's really no question that people in Israel knew this attack was going to take place. Now, the question becomes, did they inform the leadership of this country? And for my money, yes, they did. In fact, what you'll find out from Inside Job is that almost every country in the world,
right,
including the Taliban in Afghanistan, tried to warn us that this attack was coming, and yet not only was nothing done, but there was actually attempts during both the Clinton and the early Bush administration to block any meaningful investigations into the terrorist network. Okay? Now, then you go and look at these facts. In August 2001, Attorney General John Ashcroft and the top brass at the Pentagon, it was reported that they had stopped flying commercial air aircraft.
They did, yeah.
They would only fly chartered government craft. Then you find out that on the night of September the 10th, San Francisco Mayor Willie Brown was all set to fly to New York the next morning, and he gets a phone call from his security people saying, don't go to New York in the morning.
Right, right.
They knew.
They did.
They knew it was going to happen, and they allowed it to happen to further their own political agenda. Mm-hmm. And if that sounds like something that's unbelievable, just go and consider Pearl Harbor. It's now beyond doubt that Roosevelt, George Marshall, a handful of others, knew that Pearl Harbor was going to be attacked when, where, and everything, and they did nothing because it suited their political agenda, which was to get a united American population into World War II.
Now, we also
have Operation Northwoods, which was a plan approved by the Joint Chiefs of Staff during the Kennedy administration back in the early 60s to set off bombs, to target people for assassination, bombs in American cities, hijack airplanes, hijack ships on the high sea, and blame it all on Castro.
Yeah. Well, at one point, it's amazing how much there is. At one point, you bring up Dick Cheney, and he's sitting there, and they're tracking this Flight 77 as it comes towards D.C., 50 miles out, 40 miles out, 30 miles out, 10 miles out. Finally, someone says to Dick Cheney, do the orders still stand? Now, this is one of the most bizarre things because we don't yet know what orders they are. But here's Dick Cheney watching this plane for, you know, minutes and minutes and tens of minutes. What do you think's going on there?
Well, I can tell you what was not going on there, and that was the fact that there are two F-15 squadrons stationed at Andrews Air Force Base, 10 minutes from the heart of Washington, that are on. Their whole mission is 24/7 protection of the Washington area, and neither one of those units were called up or activated on 9/11. Some planes came from Maine and Otis Air Force Base and other places, but not Andrews. Also, I remember from the Cold War that we were told that Washington, and particularly the White House, the Capitol, and the Pentagon, that they're ringed with missile batteries, okay, that can be activated on a moment's notice.
Mm-hmm.
What happened to all of those?
Right.
There's been a lot of talk among the conspiracy people that there was a stand-down order. But I'll tell you what I found, and I think it's detailed in my book, Inside Job. Up until June of 2001, standard operating procedures were that NORAD commanders had the authority to take whatever action they felt necessary if there was a situation that involved the potential loss of human life. Now, in other words, if there was a hijacking, they could immediately launch planes. As of June 2001, right after the Bush administration came to power, they subtly changed these rules, and all of a sudden it became that local commanders have freedom of action in the case of a emergency, life-threatening emergency, but if it involves a hijacking, you have to get the approval of the Secretary of Defense,
Mr. Donald Rumsfeld.
The official version of 9/11 is like a big block of Swiss cheese, as we've been saying. And one of these holes in the Swiss cheese has to do with the 9/11 supposed hijackers.
They're still giving us these 19 names and showing us these pictures. I saw them just a few days ago on television. And yet what's been established clearly is at least half of those guys are still alive.
That's
and walking
right.
around the Middle East and denying any part of anything.
Yeah. Well, let's jump forward for a minute now to the 9/11 Commission. And there's a guy whose name doesn't surface a whole lot, but he's sort of the 9/11 gatekeeper for the commission. His name was Philip Zelikow.
Uh-huh.
Talk about him a little bit and his relation to the Bush family, both senior and the current administration.
Well, you know, it's like the Warren Commission. All you do is put these old hacks in there that have been around and helped cover up stuff. Thomas Keene, the chairman of the commission, and the second in command, Lee Hamilton, number one, both of those guys are leaning luminaries of the Council on Foreign Relations, that secretive organization that has dominated and controlled U.S. foreign policy since before World War II. And they all have connections not only to big business, but to the Bush family, to the oil people, the oil holdings. This is, and when we pick people like that, well, you know, do y'all remember who Bush's first choice was to head the investigation into 9/11?
Henry Kissinger.
Another leading luminary of the Council on Foreign Relations. And And that one was really a case of putting the fox in charge of the hen house, because it was been under Henry Kissinger for the past 30 years or so that put the foreign policy into place, which has resulted in these attacks on America.
Right, right.
Okay, the most ignored aspect of 9/11, the World Trade Center 7 building and its pre-planned controlled demolition.
Exactly. As a newspaper reporter, I covered at least half a dozen controlled demolitions of major buildings in downtown urban area. But being a newspaper, I couldn't just take a picture of it and say, wasn't that neat? I had to go and interview all those people and those demolition experts, and they absolutely, to a man, unanimously convinced me that you do not blow down a modern building just with some explosives, or certainly not with just an airplane hitting it. It was designed to withstand that.
Uh-huh.
So you have to use just the right amount of explosives in just the critical places, and they have to be set off in just the proper timing. And this is exactly what we see with Building 7. Forget the World Trade Centers. Look at Building 7. It was a 47-story office building that collapsed on September the 11th about 5:30. Now, we have an interview with Larry Silverstein,
right,
the owner, where he said, well, they told me they couldn't put the fires out, so I told them to go ahead and pull it.
Right.
And they pulled it.
And everybody knows that.
Saying pull it, that's a common terminology for a controlled demolition. And when you look at the collapse of Building 7, it didn't a little piece go down here and a piece go down and a wall fall over here.
Mm-hmm.
That whole thing just settled to the ground. That means that was a controlled demolition, as admitted by Silverstein. And I guarantee you they did not have time to go in
and
properly study and properly set up a demolition system within that building. This was a case, obviously, of where that building had already been set, wired, okay, to go down if necessary, and that leads tremendous support to all the witnesses, including New York firemen, who said there were multiple explosions within the World Trade Center towers, and those towers, of course, when they just settle down on themselves, have all the earmarks of a controlled demolition.
What about the 23rd floor, Jim? Was that the command center, you think?
It well could be, and that was another thing that was pretty odd. I know y'all are familiar with the story of John O'Neill, the FBI counterterrorism chief, who got so disgusted with the lack of support he was getting and the actual foot dragging by the Bush administration that he resigned his post in the summer of 2001, and then in tremendous irony took a job as head of security for the World Trade Center, and of course he was one of the casualties. But before he died, he did make some cell phone calls, and one of them he said he was in the FBI offices, which I think was on the 23rd floor, and he said he was pulling survivors from the rubble. Well, what's rubble doing on the 23rd floor before the building collapsed? Supposedly there had been no damage except up there high up in the upper floors.
Yeah. Well, Jim, before we go on, we want to give your website address again. It's www.jimmorris.com. And also, we want to relay a message to you from a man named Dangerous Dan Marvin.
Uh-huh.
He emailed us a couple of days ago and said, you are the one responsible for getting his book published by, what was the press?
Chris Milligan.
Yeah, Chris Milligan.
Trine Publishing?
Right.
Yeah, so he just wanted to pass along a thank you. He said, you're the one responsible for passing word along, and, you know, his book is wonderful.
Trine
Day.
Right.
Remember my motto, which is, none of us is as smart as all of us.
Just, right. Oh, exactly.
You know, if we could ever quit squabbling, if we could get the population of the United States to quit being so divided between Republican and Democrat, or conservative or liberal, or male and female, or black and white, or whatever, they just do anything they can to keep us divided. If we could all just get together and agree to disagree on some things, and then agree on others, like let's support the Constitution of the United States, you know, we'd be a whole lot farther ahead, don't you think?
We say that almost every day on Wing TV. Well, Jim, last weekend I was talking to a divorce lawyer. And I was reading your book, Inside Job, and he asked me what I was reading, so I started talking to him a little bit about it, especially Flight 77, and you could just see the blood start draining out of his face when he realized that a Boeing 757 didn't hit the Pentagon. So talk a little bit about that.
Well, you know, I'm just going to mention one thing. This tells the story. unfortunately for the administration and the official story, a lot of people who first arrived at the Pentagon after whatever happened had digital cameras.
Uh-huh.
Some of the motorists had digital cameras. Some of the firemen had digital cameras. And they took some really nice shots and then went home and posted them on the Internet. So thank God, and thank God for the Internet, we now have some of those photos. Now, some of the photos, the original cover story was that this big Boeing 757 hit the lawn of the Pentagon on the west side and then careened and bounced, ricocheted right on into the building and caused this huge big hole that everybody saw in the news photographs, okay? But they had to come back and alter that because some of these pictures show this perfectly green lawn in front of
right.
the building. Nothing hit the lawn. Whatever it was went right into the building.
Yeah.
All right? Now, there's also pictures of the west side of the building before the wall collapsed and you had this big hole. Even with the hole, it's not wide enough to accommodate the wings of a 757.
Right. Not even close.
So they said, well, the wings folded back and it all just kind of went in there as a torpedo, which makes no sense at all.
No.
In fact, anybody knows anything about aircraft knows that the fuel tanks are in the wings. That would have been the part that would have blown up. The whole front of the building should be black. The whole, all of that burning fuel should have been all over the lawn. None of that makes any sense. But here's the key point. In these photographs, you can clearly see the third story. Okay? Now, a story is between 10, 12 foot high, so going up to, so if the windows are intact on the third story, and you can also see the hole from wherever the plane or whatever it was entered the building. It only went up to the second floor.
Yeah.
That's only 20 feet. You go to the Boeing website, and you find that the tail on a 757 is 44 feet high,
right.
Four stories. How do you get a four-story tail through a two-story hole?
It must have ducked down, huh?
Yes. Now, here's the clincher. I interviewed a woman named April Gallup, and she was inside the Pentagon when it was struck. She was with her small boy, and she said there was a huge explosion. They were knocked to the floor. It was dark and there was heat, and there was dust and everything else. And her first thought, of course, was for her son. She found the stroller, but it was all mangled up. And now she really got fearful because she was afraid that he might be dead. But she finally heard him crying, found him, pulled him from the rubble, and the both of them crawled through the hole in the wall into the outside where they received medical treatment.
Wow.
And I asked her point blank, did you see any airplane or even any pieces of an airplane? And she said, no, none whatsoever.
Incredible.
Cybele Edmonds is a person who has refused to participate in this cover-up. What role does she play in this whole thing, even today?
You're talking about April?
Cybele Edmonds, the translator?
FBI translator.
Oh, Cybele Edmonds.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah, see, there are a handful of people. April Gallup is one. Ellen Mariani is another one. See, they've got a 9/11 fund, okay? And the government comes around and says, here, we'll give you a couple of $100,000.
The hush money.
And all you got to do is sign all this. Well, in there it says that you will not sue the government and you will not talk about what you know. That's how they've kept the majority of these 9/11 families quiet. They bought them all off.
Okay?
Yeah. But Ellen Mariani wouldn't take their money. In fact, she's suing the government
right.
and the Council on Foreign Relations and Bush and everybody else
right.
saying they had foreknowledge they should have prevented this. Okay?
Yeah.
Cybele Edmonds that you mentioned was a translator for the FBI, said she saw all the message traffic going back and forth that they knew what was going to happen.
Yeah.
And so, you know, do we thank her for being a whistleblower, and does she get a medal or something for telling the
tired.
Truth? No, she gets a federal gag order
right.
for preventing her from telling the public what she knows.
Yeah. Well, Jim, one last question before we have to go here. Compare, since you wrote Crossfire, you know as much as anybody about the Kennedy assassination, compare this 9/11 whitewash committee to those who put out eventually the Warren Report.
Right. Well, I feel like I'm in a time warp because everything
exactly.
feels like the same way it did in August of 1964. Just a little bit, a few weeks later, in September, they issued the Warren Commission report, and And they said, well, it was just an accident. Lee Harvey Oswald did it all by himself. And everybody in the country accepted that.
Yeah.
Except people in Dallas, where I was, and we knew better. We knew something else had happened there. Today, it's the same thing. The 9/11 Commission says, well, there were all these systematic failures of the normal security, but, well, they just couldn't get it together. They couldn't connect the dots, and it was still Osama bin Laden from his cave somewhere directing this.
Jim,
and it simply won't wash, and most people are accepting it.
Yeah.
Except for people like yourselves and others who have actually taken the time and trouble to look at the issues and really study it. But I'm telling you, I think time's getting short. If we want to preserve any freedom in this country, we can't wait 40 years to find out that we were scammed on 9/11. We have to know that right now, and we have to make the appropriate decisions come November.
Jim, in your book Inside Job, you wrote about a financial analyst named Ben Fountain, who talked about how the World Trade Center might have been possibly wired. And Victor, in his book, 9/11 Exposed, discusses a man named Scott Forbes who worked for a fiduciary trust, who told us about a power down that happened at the World Trade Center just days prior.
I know it. Wouldn't that have been the absolute perfect time to go in there and wire up demolition explosives?
Yeah. Well, Jim, we could go for hours and hours,
Yeah,
right. We haven't even got into the Global Hawk remote control capability of flying aircrafts in the building.
Yeah. Jim, who should people vote for? They're asking us, Kerry or Bush. And we tell them they're two wings of the same dragon.
That's right. You can vote for skull or you can vote for bone.
Exactly.
You're going to get the same deal. And they say, yeah, but if you vote for a third-party candidate, you're wasting your vote. No, you're not.
We
vote
agree.
Your conscience.
Right.
What happens if there's a 40% turnout of voters in November and a third to a half of them vote for somebody
other than
Bush and Kerry?
Right.
Then, boy, wouldn't that be something?
Yeah.
So, Jim, we got to hop here. Thank you so
all
much.
All right.
For
thank you all.
Thank you very much, Jim.
Everybody out there, go to jimmars.com. This book, Inside Job, it'll blow you away. It's as good as anything out there. Jim, thanks again. We'll stay in touch.
All right.
I think you can get it
in any bookstore.
Hey, thanks, Jim.
See you.
Bye-bye. There you go, folks.
Wow.
Jim Mars on Wing TV. He's wonderful.
He's incredible.
Right. Tomorrow on Wing TV, Jeffrey Bennett from
TheFederalObserver.com. He's a great guy, too. Wait till you listen to this one.
Tune in to Wing TV. There's a lot going on. We'll see you tomorrow.
Take care.